What this network needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
The Blind Tag, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, WLW Studios Midnight Jury and After Midnight, Inconclusive Breakdown, Neckbreaker, Thursday Night Destruction, Two and a Half Wrestlers featuring the Pat Buck Show and the Bro Show, and the Shining Wizards. These are the shows of the Shining Wizards Network. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Entertainment here.
The one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast with your hosts, the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem. All of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pulled me back to that McDonald's. Took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off-white Lexus. Driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy, home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata, still sipping my top. Sitting courtside, Knicks and Nets give me high five. I be spiked out, I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely leave from.
Yeah.
These streets will make you feel brand new. Big lights will inspire you.
That's right, bitches. Ladies and gentlemen, Shaolin, New York City, Brooklyn, New York, top of the food chain. It's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, representing the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast for another filatorial. Which means Dave and I are not going to be on this week, so you're getting me rant for as long as I want. That's pretty much what a filatorial is. And also, I talk about stuff that Dave really doesn't want to talk about. And you guys still get interested. You know, you get interested, you get motivated, maybe you'll get fucking inspired, you know? Anyway. Oh, that's a good song, man. I'm not really big on Jay's, like, later stuff. I'm more of an old school, you know, 96 to 2000 kind of guy. But when this came out, it had a bit of a profound effect on me back in, like, 2009. And by the time you've heard this already, it is 9/11 today. And Dave and I will be live tonight later on. But today, you get into the filatorial, and I'm not going to go on an emotional diatribe about 9/11. I've done that before on the podcast and on different shows. And, you know, you cry, you get out of the way, you pay your respects, talk to your friends on social media. I talk to my partner who I was with that day every year. And, you know, it's something that you'll never get over. And it was funny. I was with a friend. My wife had a friend visiting from Chicago last week. She spent the weekend with us, and we would drive. We went to a picnic in Central Park, and we were driving on a West Side Highway on the way back. And, of course, the new tower is there. And I'm not going to get into politics because we have a lot of fans from different parts of the world who have different points of view. And I'm not going to get into a fucking, you know, long-winded debate on social media about why I feel how I feel about the whole politics of the whole thing, why this happened. But I'm not a big fan of the building. Okay, I feel like because of what happened and because of my role in this whole scheme of things as a first responder that day, I feel like there shouldn't have been anything there but like a memorial, you know, with have like the names and stuff and just have that. I don't want a new fucking building. I don't want a museum. But I understand why they did it. I understand the politics of it. I also understand why. I finally understand why it took fucking 14 years to put it up. And that bothered me even more. Like, you guys want to build something, you know, and you waited, and it was all about politics. Because after the event, this city was, like, the country, the city too, but the country was, like, all in. Like, we were all nice to each other. There was, you know, everybody got along. Like, people, if they saw you in the street and they knew you were a respondo, you had something to do with it, they would, like, you know, they would thank you and shake your hand, try to buy you food and hand you shit. I turned down food and gifts from total strangers for about 8 months after 9/11. Straight up, I swear. I kid you not. And then, like, of course, religion and politics kick in again. Everybody's a fucking scumbag to each other, and the world hates you again. Or hates each other. It's a wrestling podcast, but you know I like to rant on these things once in a while, and we'll get into some wrestling. I have some interesting stuff I want to talk about too, but I want to do that and get this out of the way. So, a lot of the people that were with me that day, I still talk to this day. Almost every other day on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and I thank them every year. I thank them because I was 2 years in, maybe, as a paid first responder. I did it voluntarily from I was 17 till maybe 22, whatever it was. I don't know. But, like, I don't, it's something that I do every year. I make a point of it. Because some people moved away. Some people don't do it anymore, which is disheartening. And I'm getting burnt out, too. I hate my job now. But I hate it because of the politics. I don't hate it because of what it is. I hate all the red tape, administrative bullshit that goes with it. And I'll save that for another show. I don't know any other way to deal. You know, part of me wanted to get up today because it's like one of the rare days that I'm actually off on 9/11. And normally you have to go to work. And now I'm in communications. You got to do the tones. You know, we do like a respect thing, a moment of silence from when each plane hit each building. We do like a moment of silence. We tone radio and we do the beep, beep, beep. You know, we make the announcement. There's a big memorial down a ramp from my emergency room in the hospital because we, at my hospital, the one I work for now, lost two people as well. The place I was with back on 9/11, 2001, we lost one person as well. We lost, I think, six or eight altogether. One guy grew up in the neighborhood that I lived in prior to me coming out here to Staten Island, and he was a cool dude. I had know him personally, but I knew him from the neighborhood. I knew him from seeing him on the truck and on the road and stuff, and I would get like a, you know, tip of the hat or, hi, how are you, while we're in the emergency room, you know, two ships passing in the night, you know, my stretcher bringing one guy in and him bringing somebody else in or whatever it is. And the job has humbled me, and I've said that a million times. The job has humbled me to the point where I can honestly say half the time I have a bad day, not all the time, but half the time I have a bad day, I always think about places I've been as an EMT, people's homes, shelters, hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, hospice units, and I say to myself, well, at least I don't have it as bad as these other people do. You know, and I go home and I suck it up and I kiss my wife and kid and I pet my cats and I go to bed. Maybe I'll take something to help me sleep. Or like last night I came home and I drank fucking 3 hard ciders because it took me 3 hours to get home because of the fucking traffic and the rain. Apparently when it doesn't rain for a while in New York and when it starts to rain, people fucking panic and can't drive. because an hour and a half ride from the bus stop that I get from work to get home normally takes about 90 minutes. Took me 3 hours to get home last night. So, needless to say, I was pissed off. And I was going to get up this morning, go to the memorial, and I'm like, you know what? I don't have to go to the memorial. I don't have to. I pay my respects every single day. I pay my respects once a year to my colleagues. I wasn't with the hospital when that happened to them, but I still am part of the team, so I do my due diligence and whatnot. But I'm not, you know, I'm not this, go team, go guy anymore. And that's because I'm just bitter about fucking politics, and I hate the politics of the job, not politics in general. Well, that too, but that's just another fucking, another podcast, and I'll probably repeat that 4,000 times during this broadcast. Speaking of broadcasts, we are not live, but we are on Rant EM Radio, Rant Entertainment Media. We are a Shining Wizards Network production, and you'll be able to get all this stuff immediately after it gets broadcasted when it comes out. So, hope you guys all enjoy this. It's a rare occasion now that I get a day off and I'm home alone, so I take advantage. Anyway, getting back to 9/11, and listen, I don't care if you think the war afterwards was illegal or not. I don't care if you're from a place in the world where you kind of agree with what happened in terms of why it was. Like, I see people on social media, well, you know, my condolences go out to the people that perished and then for the illegal war that happened afterwards. Okay. That's your opinion. That's fine. You can see, I can't look at it like that. And like I said, we were driving along the West Side Highway. We see this building last week. And my friend who lives in Chicago, from Chicago, said to me, she's like, you know, I watched it on TV. The rest of the country watched it on TV. This right here at this stoplight on the highway is where your ambulance was when those buildings dropped. And she's right. I'm on Vesey Street, which is on the West Side Highway, downtown by Greenwich Village, if anybody knows the area, right by Robert De Niro's house, which ironically is mentioned in the Jay-Z song that I just played. So this is something, you know, issues. It's profound, and I could never imagine. And again, I don't want to fucking beat a dead horse. I've told everybody my story of why I was there and what happened and, you know. If you want to know, either ask me or go back to listen to the other episodes, you know. And she's right. And for the people who post on social media, you know, about the war and shit, listen. Again, I can't look at it that way. I can't. I can't because if I do, I'll get caught up in stuff that I really shouldn't emotionally invest my time into. I was a first responder for the New York City Emergency Medical Services for a private ambulance company. I responded the way I would respond to any other call, except this one was a mass casualty incident which resulted in the changing of the world, where 3,000 people died in less than 90 minutes. More than 3,000. So, I can't get into why our country went to the Middle East to police holy wars, weapons of mass destruction, George Bush, the Republicans, the Democrats, the fucking Tea Parties. I can't invest any of my time into that because my job was way too more important to worry about why we were there. Whether I agree with it, whether I don't, whether you agree with it or don't, you could do that. I can't. I can't. And I have friends that I was with that day who still suffer from that, from the effects. We've known people who've died from being down there and inhaling all the toxic fumes. I'm sure I got something. Hopefully it's not bad, but I know I've got something down there, even though I wore a mask the entire time. You know, I'm sure I caught something down there, and maybe I get something, maybe I don't. But I know spiritually, I was supposed to be there. You know, I wasn't, again, my unit was a Queens unit. I got redeployed to Manhattan that day, and the rest is history. So someone said, God or somebody else said, all right, Phil, you need to be there. We need as many people as we can to get over there and help and do what you can. And that's what I did. You know, I would do it the same way I responded to any other call, except I was there a little longer. And patient care really was out the window at that point. You're just looking for bodies, and you're looking for people you can take care of. As a matter of fact, one of my bosses that was there that day, Asian fella, he was pulling out dead firemen, and somebody, I can't believe this happened, but somebody raided a store while we were down there. Like, somebody actually went in and looted and took stuff out of a drugstore. And there was a guy pulling out, like all different shit. And I saw, like, Visine. Now, mind you, I can't see 5 feet ahead of me. But all I saw was the Red Cross lady who was 5'2" trying to hand out fucking bologna sandwiches to everybody. And then I saw this dude with, like, a fucking, like, a cart. And he had a bunch of shit. So I grabbed some Visine and I gave it to my boss. I'm like, here you go, buddy. And he was like, where did you get this? I'm like, don't even ask. Someone was looting. And he was like, I don't even want to know, you know, but good, thank you. Poor guy's Asian. He can't see it to begin with. You know, joke, hint, hint, I love you, Al. And I believe he's no longer with us either, so rest in peace to you. And we lost our leader, the guy who ran the company last year, 2 years ago from cancer. And that guy was like a huge staple in the Jewish community as well. And, this guy was all over the place that day, you know, with no regard for his body or his vehicle, you know. By the time he got to me, all the windows in his vehicle were blown out. He had like a excursion SUV with like fucking a whole light package on it and stuff. And, you know, by the time he got to me that night, the windows were blown out of it. The sirens didn't work anymore. It was all covered in soot. And he was like, all right, we're switching up. And they were just sending people in and out. And it was like the National Guard was... They closed the city down, and they blocked off the bridges. So what they were doing is the military was escorting emergency vehicles off one of the major bridges here in New York and just swapping them out with other vehicles waiting at the other side, whether it was Brooklyn or... Yeah, it was Brooklyn. And we're just like, you know, two ambulances went off. Two ambulances came on, and we just kept swapping people in and out until they had enough resources, which took at least a day and a half to get that all straightened out, you know. Because if you've been down there, there's a lot of fucking buildings. Matter of fact, when I was down there, one of the buildings down there were empty. My triage station was set up like right in front of it, and they had like laser pointers at it, like, and they were waiting for it to fall. Because it was abandoned at this point. They evacuated it. But now it's like they know because of what happened, the foundation of everything under the buildings were fucking rattled. And they knew the building was going to drop. I remember like a fire department chief walked over to us. And he goes, you might want to pack up your station. And we were like, why? He goes, we'll move down the block over here to this end. I'm like, what's going on? He's like, that building's going to fall. And honestly, within 10 minutes of me leaving that fucking place, that building fell. So, I listened to everything. I listened to everyone that day. I didn't, you know, defy anybody. I didn't get upset. I was scared, but it was a good scare. Like, it was like, okay, now you just have to make sure you know your shit, make sure all your stuff is good. You dot your I's, you cross your T's, I'll use all the puns and whatever, but you make sure that you're on point and, you know, you're working just as hard as the next guy so you can get whatever they need to get accomplished, you know. And God bless my partner, who's older than me, but he was a rookie EMT at the time. He's not even an EMT a year. And he was pulling out dead firemen. He volunteered to go back. Like, the next day, I didn't go back. For me, it was like, I'm done. You know, I can't go back there. It's, you know, I had soot on my boots for like a year, you know. And I just... For me, it's just, today's not a good day. So I'm glad I have this as an outlet to talk to you guys about it. Because, I mean, let's be honest. You know, you don't really want to hear me talk for an hour or two without something interesting, or I say something funny, because that's what I, you know, that's what we come on here to do, you know. I don't want to get too serious. But serious enough to keep everybody aware that, you know, it's just to a reminder to all of you that anything can happen in a New York minute, you know. What I mean is it could be here today, gone tomorrow. Live every day like it's your last. Do something significant. Say something significant. Be somebody. Make a difference, whether it's to yourself, to people around you, professionally, personally. Try to be the absolute very best you can be. It's as a grown-up, it sucks because you have grown-up things to do. You have a fucking job. You have a mortgage. You have bills. You know, some of us are parents. So it's like you sometimes lose sight of what you have until it's gone. And this starts a really bad cycle for me because I had lost my dad about a month after 9/11. So on top of me being an emotional wreck, I lose my best friend, you know? And you don't really get it until you lose a bunch of shit. Like, you don't... Sometimes people have their head in the clouds forever. And part of it's youth and maturity, obviously. But part of it, a lot of times, is denial. Like, you don't want to believe that you're having this shit life. You don't want to believe that things are going bad for you, you know, because you don't give a shit. Or maybe you do give a shit and you just don't know how to take care of it. And that's the hardest part, is dealing. Coping. You know, the mechanisms are all out of tune and you have to fine tune them. And it took me like about a decade to get my shit together, you know, emotionally. And I'm still not even there yet. I have an idea now, thank goodness. But you know, you haven't lived until you went into a fucking disaster. You really haven't. It's, you know, I can't say it's all fun, but it's nice to talk to people. Like, between midnight last night and, you know, noon today, it's like it's people just talking. And, you know, Phil, I love you, and so-and-so, I love you, and, you know, I miss you, and I'm glad you're good, and, you know, everything was good, and, you know, I'm not good, but I'm good now that we're all together on this Facebook or this Twitter or this Instagram or whatever, you know. And that's cool. People have gone into bigger and better things. They've gotten families. They've changed careers. But they never lose sight of where you were that day. And the significance that it had on the country, and the profound effect that it had on us as first responders and as New Yorkers. Which baffles me, because like I said a little while ago, like 6 months after that, everybody got along. People held the door open for you. People were nice to you. You know? The trains seemed to run better. The buses ran better. Traffic was always traffic because you have fucking 10 million people that live here, you know. But just imagine, like, if it was like that all the time, you know, all the time. How great it would be, you know. People fighting all the time. I hate people fight for stupid shit, you know. People just fight over the dumbest things. And you see it now on social media. It's like, oh, people just pick their platform. And I've gotten into some debates on social media that I shouldn't have. Because I don't want to lull myself and try to fucking prove to you or anybody else my point. You know, I feel how I feel, and that's it. If you don't like how I feel, then don't fucking follow me. And I've told people that too. Like, if you don't like what's going on, you know, don't listen to the show. Don't follow me on fucking Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and whatever, Periscope now that we're doing. Don't follow me on the three networks that I'm a part of. Don't follow me on anywhere in any of those mediums, you know? Whatever. It is what it is. You know, walk a mile in my shoes and then talk to me. And maybe I'll walk a mile in yours if I want to you know, see where you're coming from, you know? I'm not like a peace, throw the hands up, you know, hippie fucking tree-hugging type of guy either. I'm just, I feel like, you know, there's times for an eye for an eye. There's times for peace. There's times for war, unfortunately, you know. Sometimes conflicts are not that, you know, sometimes those epic of conflicts are never shown in full light, you know, unless you live in these places and you experience them, you know. Like, it's easy to say, oh, you know, F those whoever we're at war with. You know, I'm not gonna, you know, throw fucking ethnic slurs around. But, like, it's really easy to say that, but you don't live there. You know? And when I was a kid, it was like, you know, everybody hated Vietnam. But yet they were walking around with fucking Reeboks on. Everybody hated fucking Japan, but that Sony TV in your living room looks really well, you know? Or that Mitsubishi or that Daewoo fucking car that you had, you know. You hate all Asian people, but you're rocking their gear. Stop, please. You know, please. You're breaking my heart, you know. But yeah, 14 years, man. 14 years gone by already. And it's something like, someone said to me yesterday, man, you have good memory. I can replay those, that the next 72 hours in my head, probably hour by hour. And I do this like at least a couple times a year in my head for the rest of my life. Nothing I forgot about that. Nothing I could say, oh, I remember that happened. No, everything I've done from 7 a.m. that morning, maybe even early, well, yeah, I guess 6 a.m. because I took me to, it takes about an hour to get to work. So from 6 a.m. that morning to Thursday the 13th, I knew everything that went on that day, those days. What I did, what I ate, who I was with. Me almost getting arrested because I almost killed my fucking neighbor. That's a good story. I don't know if I told you guys this, but I lived in South Brooklyn, and I had a neighbor who, Italian guy and his wife, fucking rich people. And not to, I'm disliking because they're rich. They just fucking flaunted their money, like, around. And he owned a gas station with a little used car dealership. And he had the corner home with the gas station connected. About 26 hours after the event, the next night, I'm coming home from work. Because, of course, we have to go to work the next day. That was a fucking chore, you know? And this guy's on the street corner selling, like, you know, ribbons and T-shirts and, like, commemorative coins, 25 hours after the event, someone decided to do this, like, instantaneously to make money, and I walked over to his table, and I was like, you might want to put this away. And he was like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you might want to put this away because I'm going to go inside, get my 36-ounce Louisville Slugger, and I'm going to come out here and break every fucking piece of item you have. Well, I'm going to call the cops, and who the fuck are you? And we just went back and forth, and my ex's mom at the time, who was a really good friend of them, had to come out and restrain me. I'm like, listen, get your fucking hands off me. I'm going to break this guy's face, and I'm going to break his table up. I said, look down on my fucking boots. Look at my boots, I told him. Look at my boots, and you tell me why I think you shouldn't fucking sell these things. That I can't get this off my boots. Okay? Who the fuck are you? That you have all this money, but you want to make an extra fucking buck to sell fucking T-shirts and plaques and magnets and coins 25 hours later. There are dead bodies right now being pulled out of that fucking rubbish. Right now. And at that point, we didn't get a tally, so we thought it was sick. Like, they kept saying 6,000, 4,000, 2,000. We didn't know it was like 3,500 at that. We didn't get a count yet. They were still tallying the fucking bodies as I'm yelling at this guy. I was going to fucking kill him. You know? I don't know. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm the asshole. You know? Maybe I'm the asshole that fucking thinks that it's bad to fucking disrespect the dead by selling plaques and shit, you know? None of the proceeds will go into any kind of charity. You know, if that was the case, yeah, go ahead, man. The 9/11 fund, go ahead. Even that was a fucking farce. I don't know. People are just ignorant. Most people are ignorant. You know? And he's a charitable dude, this guy. He had two kids that were deaf mutes. And every fucking Christmas, they'd have like a light show with Santa Claus. And people would come by and look at the lights. And they'd throw money in the can. It would go to like the Deaf People Society fucking fund. I don't know what it was. But this guy was not making any kind of donations. He was fucking pocketing money from a tragedy. And I think it was stupid to throw him in a fucking building. In that building 7. Yeah, you pull out dead firemen. You know? You fucking pull your colleagues up when they're falling in broken glass and fucking pieces of debris from a building that's the size of a fucking small country. You know? You two buildings. Three buildings, I think. We count 7 and the other small buildings. Like, there's a, I mean, it was crazy. Just insanity. Take a sip of my Pepsi Max. Let's see. My phone keeps going off. I like doing these things. I could just stop and bullshit, and you guys all know what it's about. I'm not going to try to be all professional on shit, because it's just me being, you know, me being me without Dave. But and Dave can care less about half the stuff that I talk about, because Dave is on a different planet, and Dave has other things going on. So I'll only concern him with stuff that, you know, I think is worthy for the show. If not, you get your own show with me. And how dope is that? And I think it's cool, getting back to this incident, that I made the transition to another hospital, to another company that, you know, is one of, it's the oldest in the country, the biggest in New York, number 6 in the country. They take pride in this day, and they take pride in their staff, and they do the right thing most of the time anyway. So I'm just glad to be a part of that most of the time anyway. Because of, as always, politics always prevent accountability, and I think on every level in corporate America too, it's like, it's just, you know, there are so many cracks in the armor, and you're like, and if you're the guy on the bottom and you got to deal with people that are way above your pay scale and got you beat by like at least 2 or 3 tax brackets, then it's like, you know, and you know that the only thing that's separating you from them is that you're way smarter than them, and they have 2 more degrees than you do. You know what I'm saying? So I guess that's the hardest part about that, is the older I got and the more I got involved in the service, that, you know, you see what it is for what it really is, and you get burnt out, and I'm burnt out too. And I'm at a crossroads, because I've been doing this for 20 years, and I don't know what else to do. Like, if I wish, like, all my hobbies can make me money. I wish my podcast can make me money, you know? But it doesn't. I don't care about that. I just feel like if I got to do something that's meaningful, you know. The only time I would go to a manual labor job is if I fucking had to hustle, if I was hungry or homeless or something like that. If I don't have to, I just have to educate myself and get better and do better things. And that's what people should be striving to do. Every day, get better. Pick a goal, small goals, every single day. Get better and better and better. Make sure you have your eye on the prize. Whatever your prize is, I'm not judging you. Everybody who's listening, everybody who listens to me regularly knows that I'm most of the time a positive person. Yes, I battle clinical depression. Yes, I'm probably one of the most insecure people you'll probably know if you knew me in person. But I try to be the most positive person on the planet, because it makes everything around you better. People, situations, everything. It's hard, man. It's hard. It really is. It's hard when even people you work with that are not on your, on either not on your level or not on the same page, you know, It's the most frustrating thing on the planet. Family, friends, even worse. Eye on the prize. Seriously, eye on the prize. And you'll be all right. And if you guys want some pep talk, shout me out. You know where I am. I'm not a hard person to get in touch with. A lot of you guys talk to me on, you know, through messaging. And some of you even talk to me on the phone. Some of the rant guys and stuff, too. Shining Wizards guys, all those guys. We're all good friends now. And we all respect each other's space. And we respect each other's shows and what we do. And the main goal of entertainment. And I think that's what makes me more motivated is that you have all these, I'm a part of these networks that have these big personalities on their shows, you know, and some of them I met in person or done a bunch of times, some of them I haven't, but the guys I did meet in person and the guys you do talk to all the time and, you know, they're all from different walks of life, but they love the same things you do, and all we want to do is make everybody happy. And get our point across. Because our point is right. And we'll fight that to the death. And I love all of my peers the same. And that's sincere. So. Alright. No crying. No fucking complaining about 9/11 anymore. I didn't cry today. Not yet anyway. I will probably later on. But can't cry now because I got to fucking do this and prep for tonight's show. And this is for next week, so you guys are all set. So, all right, let's get into some news and notes. Very disheartening, man. My favorite band is they're all 70 years old. And they made an announcement last week that they're going on tour for the last time. And bands have done this before. The Who's done it. They're still touring. The final tour, you know. Kiss toured a million times. The final tour. Okay. Motley Crue. We're touring and they'll be back next year, guaranteed. I really can't say that about Black Sabbath. I've seen Black Sabbath 4 times. Saw Ozzy 12 by himself. And let's be honest, Ozzy 70. You know, Tony Iommi's in bad health. Geezer's getting old. Bill Ward doesn't even play with them anymore. And they're touring one more time. And they're playing the Mecca. They're playing Madison Square Garden. So, of course, we have to go. So my aunt called me up. My uncle's like, here's my credit card, get tickets, let's go, like we did, you know, a couple years ago in Jersey. They gave me this pre-sale today, right? So at like at 10 o'clock, tickets go on sale the following Saturday, which is tomorrow. So I go on at like 9:59, I type in all the information, I log into Ticketmaster, Live Nation, whatever the hell it is, type in the code, and I'm getting nothing. Refresh, no seats. 1 seat, 2 seat, I need 4 seats. 4 seats, whatever price. Now, I'm not paying fucking a lot of money, but I want to see what was available. Nothing. Not even the cheap seats. Nothing. And I'm like, I logged in. Like, I'm here. You mean to tell me there's other people doing this? I know there's other people doing it, but like, what the fuck? You know, you mean to tell me I'm refreshing my screen. My internet speed is impeccable. I can't get a fucking 2 seats. No, I can get the VIP $2,000 seats. I don't want to sit, you know, front row and meet Ozzy for $3,000 a ticket. I'd love to if I was single and 20 years old, but I'm not. That's a fucking mortgage payment and a car payment all wrapped up in one. You know, it's just unreasonable. So it's disheartening that, you know, that the industry has taken a bump, that because of nobody buying music, you have to pay out of your asshole for fucking tickets. Like, Iron Maiden just put out a new album. Amazing. I love it. You know, and they're going to be touring next year when Dickinson gets done with his cancer scare. And I know I'm going to be paying $80 a ticket. I know I am. And it's disheartening, you know, that nobody buys music anymore. That they have to sell, because nobody buys music, now you have to sell tickets for $80, $100, and $150 a clip. And if you want to sit front row, it's just astronomical. And then you pay $50 for a t-shirt, you know. But it's disheartening. But Nonetheless, I will be, you know, by this time tomorrow, I will be in possession or a confirmation of Black Sabbath tickets for February of 2016. Not a doubt. Because I don't know. I mean, they played really well 2 years ago, and I was like, this is amazing. They still sound the same. And, of course, the drums are different because Bill wasn't on drums, and I'm just a drum snob. But it's Sabbath. You know, it's Black Sabbath. It's my favorite band. It's the greatest rock and roll band of all time. The greatest rhythm section of all time rock and roll was Geezer Butler and Bill Ward. And I'll dispute that with anybody. And you could tell me John Paul Jones, John Bonham. You could tell me, you know, Bill Wyman and Charlie Watts. You could tell me what other bass player and drummer, like rhythm section, are great. I mean, you could go down the line, you know. I won't. I'll tell you the greatest rhythm section of all time is Geezer Butler and fucking Bill Ward. Just listen to NIB. You know, just listen to fucking The Wizard. Listen to fucking Iron Man. Fairies Wear Boots. War Pigs. Fucking the list goes on and on and on. You know, just, you know, Into the Void, Hand of Doom. The National Acrobat. I'm sorry. Like I can go on and on and on. The best, the greatest. That's why I'll be seeing them. You know, it's the final tour of the greatest metal band of all time. That's it. You know, that's just how it is. It's Black fucking Sabbath. I'm on the website right now, looking at them, smiling. Maybe I'll watch that concert. I got the concert. I was on vacation, and I got the tour I was on. They recorded the first. They did a show in Australia that year, which was 2013 or whatever it was. And it was on my birthday, but they played it earlier that year, like in March or whatever it was, in Australia. The same fucking set, same sound. I was like, oh, I got it on DVD. I'm like, this is fucking amazing. You know? But over 40 years of greatness. Greatest band of all time. Anyway, got the new Slayer. Love the new Slayer. I heard they filmed the newest video. The album's out today. It's called Relentless. It's Slayer. If you're expecting something different from Slayer, you're not a Slayer fan. It's the same fucking sound. No matter who's on drums, whether it's Bostoff or Dave Lombardo, it doesn't matter. Good stuff. They toured. I couldn't go. It was out of the way, and it was $100 a ticket. I didn't have the money at the time. So, I mean, I've seen Slayer a bunch of times. I'm not really too hung up about it. New Slayer. New Clutch is coming out. New Maiden is out. Just good stuff. Even the new Bon Jovi is good if you... I'll get shit for that, but it's good. I'm glad to see old bands putting out new music, man. It's fun. Really, really fun shit. I love music, man. It's the soundtrack to my soul. I've said that before. I just wish guys would suck up their pride and play sometimes. These guys have these bitter rivalries, you know. Like, you know, I know it's stupid to say, but, like, you know, Journey is touring with that Filipino guy, and he sounds just like Steve Perry. But you want to see Steve Perry on stage with him again, you know. I saw Foreigner without Lou Gramm. It's like, I loved Foreigner, but I want to see Lou Gramm with them, you know. Sometimes I think fans can't differentiate the personality for the music. You know, like, there's a big debate with Van Halen. And I'm a big Sammy Hagar guy. I don't dislike Diamond Dave. I don't. I love David Lee Roth. I do, sincerely. I just prefer Sammy Hagar's music with Van Halen better, more. Because it's what I, like, I didn't catch on to Van Halen until I was, like, in high school. Like, I knew who they were. I knew Jump, 1984, whatever. But, like, high school, my buddy put me on to, like, OU812 and Fun Lawful Car Knowledge. And then I got into, like, fucking Diver Down and, you know. And then I was in junior high school. In junior high school, I even had David Lee Roth solo shit, like Eat 'Em and Smile. You know, Skyscraper, which had, I think, Steve Vai on guitar on one of those albums. But, like, come on, man. There's a big, you know, well, and then, like, Van Halen tours without Michael Anthony, last year, and it was like he was never in a band. He was a studio musician. Get the fuck out of here. The guy was with the band for 30 years. I think the egos of these guys get bigger than the band itself. Same thing with Kiss, man. Kiss has been, they've had the same two or three guitarists and drummers for like fucking 25 years. And it's like, well, this is Kiss. No, not really. Peter Criss and Ace Frehley at Kiss with Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons. You're not bigger than, I mean, you're not bigger than the band. It's what was presented to you as a kid, and you stick with that, you know? Don't get me wrong. Eric Carr, Tommy, whatever the fuck his name is, those guys are all good, you know, drummers and shit. But, like, it's not Kiss, you know? I don't know. Maybe that's just me, you know? And there are some bands that didn't replace anybody, and they still sound the same. You know, Aerosmith. Same guys. You know? And it's about that time for some of these guys. Like, you know, let it go. When you can't move on stage anymore, you know? Like, the Stones are like, they're still fucking playing. And like, 50, 60, I saw The Who in May, and it was like, you know, it was good, but you could tell that, you know, what's his face, the front man, Roger Daltrey was like swinging that microphone around, and he was like making sure he didn't hit himself in the face with it. You know, back in the day, he could do it backwards, but now he's fucking 70 years old, you know? And Ringo Starr's son was playing drums for them, who's now probably older than me, you know? So, not that I'm that old, but, like, this just goes to show what these guys, how old they are, that tour. So, it's fun. Not the same, but, you know, you have the music to get back in and to appreciate, so. And that's my rant on that. All right. I want to talk a little wrestling. And I want to talk two things. Well, not maybe more than two things. Depends on how long I want to talk. I've been going almost an hour already. So, but anyway. I don't know if I could bring up this argument and say that this has probably been one of the worst years in terms of, like, death from wrestling so far. You know, in early January, we lost our friend Timmy Arson, you know, and then later that month, you know, you lost Larry Winters, living legend, who was probably an independent and Puerto Rican wrestling guy forever. He, you know, Timmy was 38. Larry was 58. The UK took a big loss when Drew McDonald passed away in February. You know, that guy was like the British middleweight champion. And, you know, that guy was a fucking beast. He worked in England and Ireland forever, you know. And then, of course, we lost Perro Aguayo Jr. Guy was 35 years old. Then we lost Vern Gagne, and then fucking Thomas Couch and Dusty Rhodes and Buddy Landell and Roddy Piper. And it's like, man. It sucks when some of your heroes and friends, like Timmy was a friend. The ECW Zombie. If you guys don't know ECW Zombie, look him up. He was a friend of mine. Like, Timmy was going to come on the show. He lived on Staten Island. We tape traded back in the day, you know? Like, Timmy, we weren't the best of friends, but, like, Timmy knew some of my friends that got me into the podcasting thing, and then he knew that he was due to do a show. And we talked, like, all the time on Facebook, and, you know, we exchanged phone numbers, and I'm like, listen, man, when time allows, he had a kid, when time allows, fucking come through, and I want to get you on the show, because Timmy had a good career in Puerto Rico. And the stories he tell, forget it, man. You know, and of course, you know, Vern Gagne dying at 89 years old wasn't really a big deal. But, you know, of course, Dusty hits home for me. Buddy Landell was, like, crazy, too. Like, I know he had demons. Piper had demons, too. But gone way too soon. Hands down, this might be one of the worst years in wrestling. In terms of that. You know, the stuff on TV is just way different now. And we debate that every week with people, you know. And I'm from the old school where I'm like, well, more is better. But sometimes it isn't. And I know that. I'm not stupid. I'm not ignorant. But I feel like if you did it right, you can have 90 hours of wrestling on a week. And it wouldn't matter. But they don't do it right because it's not for the older fan anymore. So, but you have the network and your collection of stuff to keep you going, and that's cool. And it gets me, you know, and then you book these fucking guests for the show and they don't come on. It's like, oh, you know, hey, Phil, you should get this guy on. Yeah, well, tell him to come on. Well, you should get that guy to come on. Yeah, well, he was coming on, but he fucking backed out again. Like, every time we go to get something going, I booked this guy last week, just Johnny G guy, you know. So I call him. He says, you know, call me an hour before. I call him. I leave him the number, the hotline to call in. I open the Skype up. He doesn't call in. Calls my regular phone while I'm broadcasting, which I can't answer the phone because I'm broadcasting. Then he leaves me voicemails on my phone and on Skype. But after the fact. Like, just tell me, like, I know people are busy, and my show is not that important. But if you make a commitment to come on the show, like, Little Egypt was like, yeah, I'm calling in, that's fine, this time of date, good. Thank you, Little Egypt, and we love you, and we're going to have you back on the show soon. She loved us, she loved the fact that and she told us that we were, you know, that she appreciated our knowledge and how cordial we were with her. Same thing with Dave Milliken. Dave's a busy guy. He's a belt designer. He's the greatest belt designer in the world. Dave took time out in the afternoon to talk to me and Dave. Tom Buchanan, the photographer. Greg Klein, Junkyard Dog Book. All friends of the show. Those guys and girls, they're committed. If they did something new every week, I'd have them on a show. You know? I just hate the fact that, you know, old stars say, hey, I have no time for you, but yet they'll come on your friend's show. That really bothered me. And I don't want to name drop or anything like that, but like, I asked a really important guy to come on the show, and he was like, ah, I can't. I have, you know, my daughters are in school. I have this job. And then, like, the 2 weeks later, he's on another show. Just tell me no. You know, don't blow smoke up my asshole and tell me the chimney, you know? Another guy is like, ah, no, I don't want to come on. I can't. But yet he's on somebody else's show. Okay. Whatever. Just tell me no. Don't give me an excuse like, oh, I can't, I'm busy. Just tell us no. I'd rather you tell me no than lie to me and then, like, don't think I'm going to hear it, you know? Or like when Honky Tonk Man's like, nah, I only go on AM and FM stations. Who does AM anymore, you fucking dumb redneck? I didn't like you that much anyway. The fans like you more than I do. My fans do. I really was never a fan of the Honky Tonk Man, ever. Ever, ever, ever. Not because he didn't come on the show. I just didn't like him, you know. Since they had him job to Ricky Steamboat. Make Ricky Steamboat job to him. I was like, this is just ridiculous. Anyway, it is what it is. So I try not to book shows with guests anymore. You know, Dave's got stuff going. He's working on some stuff. And maybe, you know, I just don't get excited anymore about it. And I wish I could talk to legends. My whole shtick was to get guys like Ricky Steamboat and those other guys that I would love to have on the show. I mean, I got to interview Jake the Snake Roberts a few years ago. That was fun. And that's when he first started getting clean. So that was cool. It wasn't on my show, but it was on the show that I was a part of. That was cool. I interviewed Gene Snitsky on another show, which was weird. Maybe I'll get the audio for that. I'm sure the Man Cave guys will let me have it. Interesting, to say the least. We had the guy that wrote Snooker's book, and sent us a big press release and an email saying don't talk about what happened. And ironically, that's biting him in the ass because now poor Jimmy Snooker is, like, indicted for murder, and he's 72 years old, and he's got half a stomach now. So, I don't know. It's just a, it's so bad. Like, you know, it's nothing good is coming out of it. I mean, the good is the indies, you know, is the PWSs of the world and Ring of Honor and Chikara. And I hope to see King of Trios this weekend that happened last week. And I hope that, PWG, I'm getting the Battle of Los Angeles soon. I should be getting that any day now. So, I mean, I'm excited for all that stuff. And so is the kid. I'm excited about my trip to WrestleMania next year, which is super cool. My wife is really into it, which is very, very cool. And you know, guys don't know how hard it is to do show prep when you're not into a lot of the shit. You know, like, it's hard for me to do current stuff with Dave when Dave doesn't watch everything that I watch. You know what I'm saying? And vice versa. Dave will watch more New Japan than I do. You know? I just don't have the patience for it. I can't watch Strong Style every fucking day. I have to get motivated somewhere. I need entertainment sometimes, you know? Hold on a second. I can't get my Pepsi Max going. Look at this cup. This dishwasher is terrible. I'm probably drinking some bad shit with this fucking soda. Gotta clean that dishwasher. Fucking nasty cups. Anyway, speaking of Strong Style, and I know this may come up on the throwbacks. It may not. I don't know. But, you know, you guys all know I was a huge mark for the magazines. Even to this day, I find myself buying, like, the PWI 500, which ironically comes out at the end of the month, and it's the 25th anniversary. However, if you have the online subscription, it's out already, and it's listed on every fucking dirt sheet and every internet website on the planet. Now, I know Double A and the Boys touched over a little bit of it on the rant this past Tuesday. And I might do it on the throwbacks tonight. However, you know, the thing is it's now more of a politics. It's not, you know, they rank these guys a certain way, and it is what it is. Like, you know, I can go back in this. I mean, like I said, it's 25th anniversary, and I think the issue comes out on the 29th of September. But let me read to you the top 10 guys. Okay, we'll start with number 10, Kevin Owens. Okay, Alberto Del Rio, El Patron, whatever, number 9. Rusev is 8. There's your first X right there. Jay Briscoe's number 7. There's your first X right there. Randy Orton's number 6. There's another X. Nakamura's number 5. X. Roman Reigns, number 4. Super Duper Trooper X. AJ Styles 3. John Cena 2. Seth Rollins 1. Now, let's talk about why Roman Reigns should even be in the top 10. Now, they have this criteria where they base the guys on matches and, you know, how long they were active that year. Listen, I don't care how active you were. No one's had a better year than Kevin Owens. I would have him at number 4. AJ Styles, New Japan champion, definitely there. John Cena is the face of the company, number 2. Seth Rollins, the world champion, he should be number 1. I get it. Nakamura had one hell of a year. But Okada's 27. Bobby Lashley is ranked higher than him. Neville is ranked higher than Jay Lethal, who's the current world and television champion, Ring of Honor. But no one's had a better year than Kevin Owens. Walks into NXT last winter, jumps his best friend, then takes the title, then goes on, beats up on John Cena for a couple of months, and now he's on the main roster. The guy's had probably the best 8 months in wrestling in the last decade, maybe 20 years. And he's number 10. He should be number 5. Randy Orton is 6. Why is Rusev 8? Patron, you know, Ring of Honor, AAA. I get Tanahashi should be top 10. Puma, Ricochet, 16. He won the Lucha Championship. But then, like, Finn Balor is 20. Ethan Carter, the third, who I know that PWI is not recognizing TNA as, you know, as a champion. But, dude, the guy's undefeated. He won the title. Like, it's still a fucking belt. He should be ranked higher than 30. Darren Young is 33. Kyle O'Reilly, Darren Young is ranked higher. Check this out. Darren Young is ranked higher than Kushida, Kyle O'Reilly, Adam Cole, Kota Ibushi, fucking Cesaro. I don't get it. Let me read 20 on. Check this out. Barrett, Bray Wyatt, Bobby Roode, Sami Zayn, Luke Harper, Kurt Angle, Mil Muertes, Okada, like I just mentioned, Finn Balor, Ryback, Ethan Carter, third, just top 30. Like, what do you, I mean, I guess why? Could they wrestle more matches? But these guys, other guys won titles. Okada, the Rainmaker. Come on, man. Darren Young is in the top 35? He's a fucking tag team wrestler. Why? Because he's gay? You gonna put him in the? Because you're not gonna, you're discriminating against gay wrestlers? You gotta put him in the top fucking. Darren Young shouldn't even be in the top 50. Tag team wrestlers in general, unless you're like in Ring of Honor or Japan and you're going for major championships, maybe you shouldn't be in the top 50, let alone the top 30. I'll give you top 50, but not in the top 30. But Bobby Lashley's ranked fucking higher than Bray Wyatt? Like, I don't get that. I don't get it. Dean Ambrose is you know, ranked higher than Jay Lethal. What the fuck has Dean Ambrose done? Nothing. I'm the lunatic fringe. I look up at the sky. I'm crazy. Look at me. Woo-woo. Love the guy to death, but come on. Come on, man. You kidding me? Really, though? You're ranked higher than that guy? Okada? You're ranked higher than Okada? Come on. Have you seen Okada's work? The guy's a fucking beast, man. Crazy. Just crazy. Sheamus. 42. Cesaro, 41. Elgin. Michael Elgin is ranked lower than fucking Sheamus. Biggie Langston is ranked better than Bobby Fish and Samoa Joe. Jimmy Uso is ranked better than Austin Aries. Kane better than Kofi Kingston. Kenny Omega, Tyson Kidd, who's injured half the year, is ranked better than the fucking best light heavyweight one of the best fucking wrestlers on the planet, Kenny Omega. And Kenny Omega is ranked 54th. Stop. This list is atrocious. Who's number 500? Let me see. Let's see. Let me scroll down here. I didn't even look at that yet. Let's see. Who's 500? Space Monkey. Space Monkey's ranked 500. Chris Dickinson, 463. Another guy who stood up the show. I still have Chris's shirt in the fucking closet. So, Chris, whenever you're ready, who fucking works out 70 feet from my house. Let's see. Who else is in here of importance that I think should get a fucking rub? Alex Reynolds, 430. Big fan of Alex Reynolds. Let's see. I'm just scrolling through the list here. Like, half these fucking guys I haven't even heard of, you know? Jimmy Havoc from the UK is ranked 357. I don't know. Jimmy Havoc should be a little higher than that, guys. Beans that we never heard from half these other fucking people. You know? I don't get it. Tommy Dreamer's still ranked. Tommy Dreamer wrestles 5 times a year. He runs his own promotion, but he's ranked 303. I don't get it. Ultimo Dragon's still ranked. I didn't even know he still wrestled. Stevie Richards is still ranked. Don't get it. Charlie Haas is still ranked. Where are these guys wrestling? Can someone send me a video? Mood is still wrestling. Really? 228? Jushin Thunder Liger is 50 years old, 230. I don't know. I mean, he still wrestles, though, so I guess he can get a... I mean, you know. I don't know. Colt Cabana, 157. Colt Cabana wrestles his ass off everywhere. Like, Tommaso Ciampa's 133. Like, the list is crazy, you know? But I can go on and on and on and on and on. But you have an idea of the politics now. It's just cool if you know, like, we know Dickinson, so that's, and he's been on a fucking tear this whole year, him and his crew, with Jocka and Pinky Sanchez and all those guys. You know, he's been, you know, I'll give him his due. He's a fucking beast, and I love his style. But, you know, there's so many people that are ranked higher than him that I'd never even heard of, even in the indies. And I kind of try to keep up with the indies, and I've never heard of half these fucking clowns. So, am I partial because Chris is a friend of the show and, you know, and he's a local guy? Yeah, I guess, kind of. I guess I can say the same for, like, Chris Payne and guys like Moff and Kevin Matthews and all those other cats. You know, I'm partial because they're the neighborhood guys and they wrestle for good promotions outside of whatever's not on television. Yeah, I guess so. I guess I'm fucking bitter. It is what it is. So... But you go back and you look at, like, it's funny because it started 91. Let's look at 91's top 10. We'll break it down. 10. Hogan, Savage, Sting, Scott Steiner, Boat, Steve Williams, Arn Anderson, China. Okay. But Kurt Hennig didn't make top 10 that year. Neither did Ted DiBiase. Great Mood was 20. Bret Hart was 21. 91. Can you believe that shit? This is... I think I still have that book, too. I'm going to the basement now and look it up when I'm done with the show. Let's look at 92. 92. Good year for wrestling, by the way. Sting.
Sting.
Randy Savage, Ric Flair, Rick Rude, Bret Hart, Ricky Steamboat, Jerry Lawler, Scott Steiner, Ultimate Warrior, Steve Austin cracking the top 10. Go to 93 when my computer decides to cooperate. And it's not, so we'll wait for the fucking rainbow circle of death on my Mac. But, I mean, you could just tell, like, the, you know, how things were back then by just looking at these lists, you know. It's really cool to compare these lists. I, you know, I might still do it with Dave, because Dave will probably have a different opinion from me. 93? Yeah, 93. Check this out. Bret Hart, number one. Vader, two. Shawn Michaels, Sting, Yokozuna, Rick Flick, Root 8, Kurt Hennig breaks top 10, number 9. Scott Steiner is 10. And Scott Steiner wasn't even a fucking singles wrestler back then. But Hogan's ranked 17th, and that was his last year in the E. 17 Hogan's ranked. Crazy, right? Let's go to 94. I think Diesel ranked number one in one of these. Fucking hated Diesel. Give me 1 second. Come on, computer. I'm doing a show here. Work with me. But yeah, 94 was a weird year for wrestling anyway. Here we go. Top 10. Bret Hart. Hogan went from 17 to number 2 in 1 year. Because he went to WCW. Only because he went WCW, he gets number 2. Where Flair should be number 2. Number 1. Flair should be number 1. Right now, it's Bret Hart, Hulk Hogan, Ric Flair, Vader, Michaels, Austin, Razor Ramon, Sting, Ricky Steamboat, and The Rock at Owen Hart. DVD coming out with Owen Hart, too, by the way. But it's going to suck, according to Bret Hart, because the wife handcuffed all the footage. But anyway, I digress. Hogan went from 17 to fucking 2 in 1 year. Can you believe that? Crazy. Crazy, I tell you. All right, 1995. 21-year-old Phil. Diesel, Shawn Michaels,
Sting,
Bret Hart, Sabu, Hulk Hogan. Sabu's running harder than Hogan. Van Vader, Randy Savage, Razor Ramon, Misawa. Misawa should be fucking over. They should switch Misawa and Sabu. Sabu should be 10. Misawa should be 4. But anyway, you get my point that it's nonsense. But nonetheless, I do it every year. I love it. I read it. I talk about it. We did talk about last week that Triple H and WWE signed that chick from Japan, Kana. She's going now by the name of Asuka. That's going to be her name. Triple H put her up on, you know, they had a Twitter thing yesterday. And starting today, Kana will be known as Asuka. Means future, towards a future with those who never stop loving WWE. All right. Good for you, Kana. She's bad. She's a bad bitch. Okay, let's see what else I got going on over here. My computer's does shits today. Come on, computer. But yeah, that women's division's getting really, really crowded in NXT. So they better start making some stars really soon. Let's see. Yeah, about the racist comments about what's a face, I don't care. You know, at this point, listen, if you're dumb enough to put racist fucking comments on social media and you're an employer of a publicly traded company, you know, I don't know, then you're stupid. I like Finn Balor's new shirt, by the way, Balor Club. Maybe he'll start a new club in NXT. That'd be fucking dope. New Kevin Owens shirt is pretty dope, too. Paul Heyman's 50 years old today. 50 years old, Paul Heyman. Paulie is, they call Jeff Hardy the charismatic enigma. Is that what they used to call him? See, I think of Paul Heyman like that. Where Paulie's vision, although it was tunnel vision, Paulie's vision was very, very, very structured towards how I enjoyed watching wrestling in my late teens, early 20s. The hybrid styles, the shoot fighting, the lucha, the fucking garbage wrestling they call it, with the tables, ladders, chairs, chains, fucking shards of glass, kendo sticks. And he's a brilliant guy. You know, writing and stuff like that. And he makes stars, you know. So when people get mad at me when I debate him and they're like, well, how come when he had Cesaro, you know, he didn't fucking do anything with him? Listen, you can only do so much with certain people. Okay, I'm not saying Cesaro. I love Cesaro to death. I do, wholeheartedly. I do. However, I think it's hard when you're put in a position to say, hey, here's a guy or a girl, make him something. And nobody expected him to do that with CM Punk. Like, you knew CM Punk was good in the indies. But nobody really knew that CM Punk was going to be, like, the next big thing, man. Nobody knew that when he was doing Ring of Honor. Nobody. I mean, he was good. He was very good at what he did. He also lost a lot of matches, too, believe it or not. People don't even recognize that and remember that shit. But he did. And if you did think you were, then either you're a visionary or you're full of shit, because no, you didn't say that to me initially, but no one expected that. But he did. He saw something in Punk, and he ran with it. That's fine. I could dig it. However, can't do it with everybody. But nonetheless, anytime Paul Heyman's around or involved in pro wrestling, it's good. I like the stuff with Lesnar. I do. I always did. Well, that's all Lesnar needs. Lesnar can't talk. Beats up people. Paulie speaks for him. Paulie did it with Sabu. Paulie did it with Dangerous Alliance. Like Bobby Heenan. Bobby Eaton couldn't talk. You know, Jim Cornette did all his talking. So when he went to Dangerous Alliance, or him and Arn Anderson teaming up or whatever. It was just same thing. You know, some guys could talk, but got Paulie anyway. Like Steve Austin could talk, but Paulie spoke for him in WCW. You know, it is what it is. Let's see my notes here. My computer's awful today. You suck. Yeah, Titus O'Neil talked about, he was interviewed the other day, right? He talked about he was doing something with NZPWI to promote Raw, and he was like, they asked him about the tag team division, and he goes, and I quote, "The tag team division is definitely loaded with a lot of talented teams, a lot of talented individuals, as well because of we do have singles matches with the partner being out there, so without having a partner out there. It's a great time for tag team division. The Dudleys are back. One of the most historic tag teams in WWE, if not most successful, if you're going by title reigns alone. It definitely gives a kickstart to a new division, a new era, to a tag team division. Hopefully we can continue to be a big fixture in that push for great tag teams in WWE. I didn't know Dave Bautista got him into wrestling either. I didn't know that. Like, got him in. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that until I read this article. I'm a tag team mark. I feel you can build stars out of tag teams. It's been proven. Go down the line of great tag teams. Midnight Express had, you know, build Bobby Eaton out of that, you know. You build Bret Hart out of the Hart Foundation. Shawn Michaels out of the Rockers. You know. It happens. It does. Sadly, it's not like that anymore. When your company's going in a different direction and you don't see Jimmy and Jey Uso splitting up. You might split up, you know, the New Day guys, because I think Biggie Langston has more of a look to him than the rest of the guys do. You know, I mean, Xavier has probably the, not in ring, but he's more charismatic. But I think Big E's got more of a look to him. Primetime plays. I mean, if Titus O'Neil straightens up, and he's not as sloppy as he used to be. You can probably market him too. But it's not the same anymore. It really isn't. Not really much to talk about. I got all the stuff out of the way. I mean, I'm excited about the Star Wars stuff. I'm excited that, I'm excited about a lot of things coming up on The Rant and Shining Wizards and all that shit on the networks. So, let's play some music and get the hell out of here. So, let's do that. Let's play some music here. Anyway, I want to thank all you guys for listening to my fucking rant today. Another filatorial in the books. Of course, you can download this and all the rest of our episodes on turnbucklethrowbacks.com. You can actually go on iTunes and leave a review on Turnbuckle Throwbacks if you search us on the Apple there. Also, you can get a review. I'm sorry, you can leave a review on the Shining Wizards Network iTunes page, as well as the Rant EM Radio, TuneIn, all that other shit. You know, you want to email us, turnbuckle throwbacks1@gmail.com, Twitter and Periscope at @TBuckleTbacks. You want to snail mail us, turnbuckle throwbacks1@gmail.com. We're on live every Wednesday on Rant EM Radio, Rant Entertainment Media. Where else are we? Geek Life Radio. Every Saturday evening at 9 p.m., 8 o'clock Central Time for you Midwesterners out there. Want to give a shout out to our boys over at TalkBrunch.com, ThumbstickNinjas.com. Go support them. Go support all of our shows on all the networks that we're a part of. All the links are there. Don Tony, Kevin Castle, Wrestling Soup, Mega Pals Radio with Geeks of the Industry. All of it. Please. Support indie wrestling. Support fucking podcasting. Support pro wrestling. Support us. Buy a t-shirt. ProWrestlingTees.com/turnbuckle throwbacks with four different designs. We have the original design, which Dean Stoll made for us. We have the British Inspire World of Sport logo. We have the NES logo. And we have the, what else we have? That's it. All those happy horse shit. Oh, yeah, we have the New Japan logo. The Mega Powers t-shirt, I call it. Anyway, guys, remember that I love you all. Take care of yourselves. You know, of course, each other. Avoid the clap. Don't get arrested. Hug your mom. Be kind to animals. Don't say the N-word. And I mean Nancy. No, I'm joking. And just enjoy your lives, man. Live every day like it's your last. And remember, it can all be gone in a New York minute. So, until next week, same bad time, same bad channel. Peace out, kids. Somebody's gone to jail. You find somebody to love in this world. You better hang on to the nail. The wolf is always at the door.
Somewhere, make these dark clouds disappear until that day.